The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library. The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We are here because of our beautiful patrons who donate a little each month. We humbly ask you to please consider joining our Patreon, because what you choose to support will continue. What you do not, won't. And yes, there are even free memberships. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. That's where all the real magic happens. Find our weird presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And even our weirder merch at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Thank you.
Darling, excellent. You've returned just in time. Did Grimms have everything I sent you for?
Oh, yes. Well, either that or a reasonable substitute.
Grasshoppers?
Well, no. They were all dead.
Dead would have been fine. They'd have died when I dipped them in gold anyway. What's in here? Live tadpoles. Gold won't stick to tadpoles, and goats won't eat them.
Madam, I cannot read your mind. And I must say, I'm now grateful for the inability, and the fact that guests have arrived. Excuse me.
Greetings, everyone. Hello, Mr. Jason. How good to see you. This way, everyone. Welcome. Sir. Not that way. No. This way. Right this way to the reading room. What's that? No. The library is not open to just wander. Yes. Oh, I see. It's your first time visiting with us. Oh, you poor thing. I mean, you're so behind in your knowledge and blind to the rules. Oh, and such. Yes. Mr. Darling.
Yes, madam.
Would you keep a special eye on, what's your name, sir?
You don't want to do.
Mr. Bullfinch. You'll keep a caring eye on Mr. Bullfinch, won't you, darling?
Delighted to, madam.
Bullfinch. Where do I know that name from? Your family runs the village's building inspection service. Oh, how lovely. Oh, my. Please go ahead straight into the reading room, sir. Mr. Bullfinch. There we go. Oh, my. Oh, it is so good to see everyone, all cozy, in just the reading room. I hope you've all been doing well. Before anyone asks, but many of you were there, so you know. Yes, our spring celebration of Lupercalia was a smashing success. We were able to keep it a safe secret from the outsiders. You know, the people who truly weren't interested in such things in the village. they boringly celebrated Valentine's Day with their forced, overly sweet, barely sincere attempts at romance, sending silly hearts everywhere. Ugh. Excuse me. But we had a rip-roaring time in Phantom Forest with long feast tables overflowing with food, music, and dancing, and then a wild game of chase through the forest, followed by some real romance. Anyone who is still missing their toga or shift-typed nightgown, please check our lost and found later. Maybe just Mr. Darling will let you take a peep in the box. Maybe a little peek. We'll work out a system for you to collect your garments in private somehow. There's a good number of these garments that were left behind, upwards of perhaps 100 or so. So I don't even know how they were lost or came off. Yes, I do. They were obviously snagged on the thorny bushes or caught on the horns of various animals. Yes, that's probably what happened. Oh my goodness. The hospitality tray. Many of you have already found that Natasha has sent up some treats. There we are, from the bygone era of ancient Greece. There are dates and nuts and figs. Some of the figs have been soaked in Aunt Winnie's wine, so have respect for those drowned treats if you wish to stay upright in your chair. Oh, and there are tadpoles in a little bowl, live ones. They were a little known Greek delicacy, so make sure you get some before they're all gone. Thank you for being here, everyone. We're so glad you visited. Well, my lovelies, I am very pleased this charming evening to share with you the story of the great god Pan. I can't imagine that you've somehow missed my stating in the past that we in the library are exceptionally fond of anything with horns, myself being born under the sign of Taurus the Bull. May be a contributing factor among several as to why this is. I also cannot imagine, but will certainly forgive any among you who may not know, that Pan is famous for his luscious set of prominent horns, as well as a few other not totally off-putting attributes, I guess. Long ago, before the current reigning deities that hold sway over the current popular religions, way back in what we sometimes refer to as the good old days, when the Greeks and Romans had a whole string of unique, powerful, and let's say unusual or unconventional gods, Pan was one of the most colorful and beloved among them. What would happen if you were to step away from the current gods and turn toward one of the old gods like Pan and call out to him? Perhaps pay homage to him with a few incantation-like prayers and incense, and even serve up a few small sacrifices or two, awakening him to your cause. Well, I can't get too specific with my answer, but those who attended the Lupercalia festival might know. We'll return to this topic later. One of the most important things you should know is that in the historical Greek past, several thousand years ago, their gods used to come into being much the same way as you common mortals do. However, there were far less restrictions on who could mate with whom or what. And Pan's origin story is like some people's, and possibly my own. It's hazy. In one telling, Pan is the offspring of Zeus, the mighty god of war and lightning, and Hybris, the nasty goddess of insolence and violence, which doesn't really seem to suit Pan, actually. Other records list Hermes as Pan's father, and this seems more befitting, as Hermes was the god of more amiable things like trade, travel, sleep, fertility, and animal husbandry. Pan's mother was also rumored to have been an unnamed nymph, but is much more likely to have been born from Penelope, who was famed for her attributes of faith and fidelity to her husband Odysseus. Which is curious because Hermes was said to have seduced her, persuaded her into loving him when he visited her in the shape of a goat. So, this caused her to become the mother of Pan. And this nicely does explain Pan's other unusual physical features. Pan, if you've not had the pleasure of seeing him, is often vividly depicted both in sculpture and in countless artworks. And typically, he has the upper body of a fine and fit man. He is shown bearded, with tousled hair, and his notable horns, which sometimes shoot skyward from his forehead, and other times are parked evenly on the sides of his magnificent head. The lower half of the god is completely that of a large goat, complete with coarse hair everywhere, two sturdy hooves, and a wiggly tail. He is portrayed walking upright at all times, implying that he is predominantly more human-like and less related to the beastly half of his physicality. I think you'll find it so interesting to note that the word Pan means all, hinting at inclusiveness, as in a helpful panacea or a cure-all. Ironically, the word Pan also gives us panic and pandemonium. There must be a reason why. Speaking of pandemonium, tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the Broom and Fang Pub. For those of you who may not know, there's a secret place we love to go. A gothic witch and werewolf club, our beloved Broom and Fang Pub. They welcome monsters, fiends, and freaks, things with horns and claws and beaks. If you can be trusted, they'll welcome you, those who can't end up on the menu. Play Destiny Darts or Prophecy Pool. Or lose your heart to a flirty ghoul. Watch talon-toed demons cut a rug, while parched vampires sip blood from a jug. The kitchen is staffed with all manner of beasts. They chop skin and boil and cook up the feast. Order odd grub, or some drink with foam. I'm sure a Wendigo cub will walk you home. But don't say a word, not a single thing. You've never heard of the Broom and Fang. Friday night is art night, my spooky lovelies. The Broom and Fang supplies the paint and bubbly. Natasha and Stefan have agreed to pose. No, I don't know if it's with or no clothes. Just sip and paint them and don't be a schlub. Try to behave yourself at the Broom and Fang pub. Now, I know what you're thinking, and shame on you, but you're wondering what makes this odd god so interesting. What were his powers, and what does he do? What did he do? These are all excellent questions, and boy, do I have unusual answers for you. Number one, I want to stress again just how ancient the history of this minor god was. And yes, Pan was considered a minor god, but he was very real to thousands of people for thousands of years. Long ago, the multitude of gods that people worshipped back then often had different attributes, strengths, or talents that endowed them with powers over the elements or the geology of the earth or the fate of men. They also had powers over places and things that they were associated with. Pan was considered a minor or lesser god because he wasn't in charge of the heavens, the weather, or the fate of men by directing wars like Zeus. No, Pan was what was known as a pastoral god, making him a lord of terra firma, the fields, the soil, nature, herds, and crops. You know, the very thing all humans exist upon and depend upon to survive. I don't know about you, but we in the library consider this appointment to be absolutely significant. So, and I'm not recommending that you do this, but if you do stray only the slightest bit from the path in Phantom Forest, you are more than likely to find a statue of the great god Pan. There's also a large statue of him in our windowed garden room on the third floor of the library, which I'm marginally sorry you cannot get to. Worshipping Pan in his day, and even now, if you dare, was a wise and beneficial thing to do. So, how did they do it? How did the people of these times make it known to the bucolic god that they venerated him, needed him, and were hopeful that he would shed his grace upon them so they might survive? Many Greek and Roman gods had designated temples for the masses to visit. Pan was tied to nature and had caves. Several caves were associated with him, but a cave near Mount Parnassos in central Greece and one in Attica, south of Athens, were prepared in such a way that those caves were dedicated to the specific worship of Pan. And one group of animal owners long ago were eager to seek out the horned god in order to gain favor with him. These were the many hunters and shepherds who sought wild animals or drove their wandering flocks for miles and miles, seeking pasture land to keep their animals as their livelihood. countless shepherds made long pilgrimages to these caves and others, inside which solemn altars and graven images of the god Pan stood, stoically waiting for the presentation of live sacrifices. The hopeful herdsmen, as a way of worshiping, would, let's say, trade the life of a few of his very best sheep or goats from his flock, the healthiest, most beautiful animals, those without lameness or even the smallest blemish upon them, would be given. He would send them to the god in hopes of being blessed with the providence of many more like it. This seemingly harsh action, providing prosperity for the shepherd's family and community. This was the way. Others who were not shepherds also traveled to the caves to leave valuables for the god Pan. They placed upon the altars perfect pottery, handmade clay figures, lamps or lighted votives, and even prized items made of sparkling gold. It is known somehow that Pan was particularly fond of gold-covered grasshoppers, which his faithful did manage to present to him. You know, my dear guests, as a small and curious side note, I thought you might like to know that nymphs were a large but lesser class of divine female deities who were also worshipped in caves by all of Greek society. These gentle, wispy women were not immortal, but were extremely long-lived. They were closely associated with Pan and were elementally linked to their dwelling places. So, water nymphs were the very swirling nature of rivers, lakes, and oceans, while provincial nymphs dwelt and influenced the forest, fields, and countrysides. And yes, I know there's talk of nymphs in Phantom Forest. I'll just reiterate that I'm well aware of this. Thank you. Among Pan's many distinctive traits that you're probably aware of, the god was willful, playful, and known for his mighty voice, and for being a bit of a trickster. He was also linked forever with music. He is almost always portrayed with a singular musical instrument, and the god Pan is credited with the very creation of the uniquely angled wind instrument, the Pan flute. How this charming, melodious device came to be is not so sweet of a tale. The ancient story goes that Pan, upon seeing the beautiful wood nymph Syrinx out hunting with her bow and arrow, fell hopelessly in love with her. Syrinx was the daughter of the river god Ladon. Instead of wooing Syrinx, Pan, who was overcome with, let's say, love for the enchanting nymph, chased her. His harsh, demanding pursuit and strange appearance frightened her. She called out to the god Zeus to protect her. Just as Pan caught hold of the fleeing nymph, Zeus transformed her into a clump of river reeds that Pan grasped in his hungry hands and broke the reeds into pieces. The broken, hollow reeds floated upon the water. Pan was instantly saddened and heartbroken at the loss of the fair nymph, and he began to gather up the pieces of the reeds in his hands. And he cried, because this was all that was left of his desired one, Syrinx. He began to press the fractured pieces of the reeds to his face and kissed them with his sad lips, his breath then passing through them, causing music to flow from the reeds. To this day, the pan flute or pan pipes are known as the syrinx musical instrument. This ultimately romantic tale, romantic I suppose, brings me to tell you about another reason the god Pan was so popular, but also quite problematic. If you hadn't put the pieces together yet on your own, well, I'll just say that if you factor in that Pan is a half-man, half-beast, immortal god, who is the overseer of the rustic lands and the bounty of livestock and fruits of the earth these lands bring forth, and the fact that he loves to play music and cavorting or frolicking with nymphs. I mean, none of these things is too much of a negative in itself, because all of these things do unite people with their bucolic, life-loving appeal. A panacea or cure-all for boredom or the trials of everyday life. But Pan was also known to keep company with another male god, Dionysus. Dionysus was a fellow pastoral god, the god of wine and festivities. A wonderful thing he's famous for was teaching greedy King Midas a potent life lesson by granting him the power to turn anything he touched into gold. Well, Pan made sure that the vineyards heartily produced the juicy grapes that made the luscious wine. And together, the two fun-loving gods often took part in feasting, drinking, and lascivious merrymaking, creating a wild party atmosphere of lawlessness and debauchery, or pandemonium, if you will. Now, don't worry, because here's where my story gets worse. You may be thinking, so what? So what if this strange god is kicking his hooves up with his friend who enjoys the same things, and things are getting a little out of hand. So what? Well, I'll tell you, my lovelies, I actually prefer gods to behave a little more human-like at times, and please don't repeat that. I've told you this, please. Anyway, in any case, back in these ancient times, apparently the problem that arose when Pan was on one of these famous rogue ruckuses for long periods of time with his friend Dionysus and the frisky forest nymphs, the problem was that he dropped all attention toward his official godly duties. I'm guessing this meant that the grazing lands either flooded or dried up. The new growth of crops didn't happen, and the herds of cows and flocks of goats and sheep wandered off or didn't reproduce. Another problem was, Pan did not like his salacious celebrations to be interrupted. And when the commands of the higher gods or the cries of his worshippers pleaded with him or directed him to sober up and work, Pan rebelled. And in the weirdest way. Because, as it turns out, Pan was pantomorphic, meaning he could change or morph into the presence of many things. When he was discovered indulging in a wine-swilling spree, it is believed he could instantaneously escape his overlords or worshippers by transforming in the blink of an eye into a tree, a wolf, a bee, a pond, or a cow or a pig, anything he wanted to be at all. It is also written that the provincial god had the power to run or sprint for insanely long distances and never tire from it. Or he could even teleport in a single second, so he could just flee from his duties instead of shapeshifting, I suppose. One more short anecdote about Pan I think you'll enjoy. There's the famous story of the home of the gods, Mount Olympus, being under attack by a thundering herd of giants. Pan was said to have let out such a horrendous shout with his mighty voice that the giants immediately became gripped by fear and ran, abandoning their takeover of the gods' home. Pan's voice was said to have incited the very first known act of pandemonium. I think you should know, my lovelies, that acts of worshipping the old god Pan are not as far off in the misty distance as you might assume. In fact, some of you may want to peruse your great-great-grandparents' faded old photos, because all through the 19th century, there was a massive resurgence of interest in Greek mythology, and a specific and deep fascination with the faunist god, Pan. The craze for the earthy god saw people buying, collecting, and even creating life-size statues of the half-goat god and lovingly displaying them in their gardens, greenhouses, and even inside their homes, some with little altars. Actual crowded festivals were once again held in his honor, bringing the old god, in a sense, back to life. Some believe this is true even now. He is still especially dear to those who are enamored and respectful of the mystery of the forest and its magical beings and animals. Remind you of anyone? Thank you all so much for being here with us this fine evening, my lovely guests. Mr. Bullfinch, if you will please remain seated, we will have a look at our schedule and see if we absolutely cannot book a date in the far future for you to inspect the library. Isn't that so, Mr. Darling?
Certainly, madam.
If the rest of you will please gather your things and follow handsome Mr. Darling out of the library and let him lead you down a straight path to the front gate, please. I don't want you to accidentally trod on some of the new plantings I've been informed are definitely coming up. And there are still some little lambs and goats loose on the property from our spring bash. Gathering. Apparently they just keep multiplying. And we wouldn't want you to trip over them. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Madam, you didn't even hint to our guests about the Faunalia Festival. Is this winter?
Do you have any idea how many of them are pregnant since attending the Lupercalia Festival?
Probably quite a few. But Faunalia isn't until December 5th. Their babies won't even be born yet.
You're right. Fully human babies take 9 months. But all of these babies will be born in July.
Oh my. You mean... Pan. Genesis.
Something like that, yes. And thank you for not calling it a pandemic.
The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We are here because of our beautiful patrons who donate a little each month. We humbly ask you to please consider joining our Patreon, because what you choose to support will continue. What you do not, won't. And yes, there are even free memberships. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. That's where all the real magic happens. Find our weird presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And even our weirder merch at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Thank you.